Hello everyone and welcome back to the Artistic Futures podcast. My name is Marie and in this series I will be meeting some extraordinary people who work in music and opera and who are keen to share their passion with the next generation. From performers to designers, directors to choreographers, you will get an insight into how a range of artists built on their careers, turning what they enjoy doing and were good at into a profession. Again, it will be full of useful tips and advice for those of you who would be tempted to give it a go. So, let's get started. In this episode, I'm excited to speak to multi-talented Hannah Biel Sanders and Gilles Del Carmen Suriel from the Ladies of Midnight Blue. Ladies of Midnight Blue are an Afro-Latin percussion and brass duet. They create a powerful upbeat fusion of rhythms, weaving combinations of melodic percussion, brass, vocal chants and mbira. They have performed all over the world, and in the last 12 years, they have been workshop facilitators and guest artists for various projects and residencies, including Opera North Resonance Residency. On Saturday the 23rd of March, the Ladies of Midnight Blue will be performing their family show A Love Revolution at the Howard Assembly Room. Hi, Gilles and Hannah Biel. I'm very happy to have you on the Artistic Futures podcast today. I'm really excited to speak to you about your journey as an artist and about the work you've been doing. So, yeah, to start this discussion, I wanted to ask about your personal and musical background. So, where does your love of music come from? Did you grow up surrounded by music, or is it something that came to you a bit later in life?
I started playing trombone at 9 years old. I grew up in New Jersey, and our public school systems had a really good music program, and the younger schools acted as feeders for the high school. So it was in all of the schools' best interest to have a music program, orchestra, choir. And we did dance and drama as well, so they can like feed those larger schools when we got older.
My music career is a little different. So I didn't play music until I was in my late 20s. My brother was a musician. My sister was a musician, but I was more interested in visual arts. So actually, the first time I played drums was with Hannah Biel. So I knew Hannah Biel because she played in a salsa band, trombone, and my sister was a singer at the salsa band. So my sister used to bring people back after the gigs to our house or our flat at that point. And then Hanabi used to come along, and that's kind of how we met. And then at one point further down the line in our story, Hanabi moved in with us because we had another room in the house that we lived in. And she brought with her all of her drums. One day I was just like, you have loads of drums. You should teach me how to play one of these. And that sort of from there, she taught me drumming djembe in particular. And then I say that I was strict to perform with her on the first time. This is my story and I'm sticking to it. Because she invited me to go along with her to an open mic. I kind of just went, I don't want to play. And then she's like, oh, maybe we'll just put the drum in the car just in case you do want to play when you get there. But later on now I found out that she was also trying to like amp herself up to do the same thing, to play at the open mic. But at that point, my side of the story was that I got tricked into performing for the first time live.
And then you didn't stop. Is that?
And then I haven't stopped.
So I grew up playing trombone and like in high school, middle school, and then it wasn't until university. I went to a historically black college in Virginia first, and then I transferred back home to New Jersey to Rutgers University and ended up doing a lot more classical music. And there is where I needed an extension of my voice, and I picked up djembe from a friend, and I started to play djembe and found that to be a really good outlet. And from there, I started collecting drums and taught myself how to play. And then eventually ran into Gilles, and then so that's kind of where our story kind of gets started there.
So is that how the Ladies of Midnight Blue came together?
Before the Ladies of Midnight Blue, it was Hanabiel and Midnight Blue. So, yeah. Or it actually was Midnight Blue, the band, and that was me trying to learn. I was on a classical music course, but wanted to learn jazz. So got a few friends together. Some were jazz musicians, but most of them were classical musicians. And we would just have jam sessions, and we didn't really know how to do it. So we're just like, let's just improvise on a scale. Let's choose a scale and like start playing the same note and then just figure it out. And then that's how Midnight Blue, my band, started. And I would make the music based on like a drum pattern that I was created in my mind, or a little riff that I wanted to play, or you know, or melody that I would have. And that's how Midnight Blue started. And it had so many iterations. At some point it was like a bass, a trumpet and trombone, then it was a didgeridoo, then it was a flute player. It was all kind of amalgamations. And then once I met Gilles, we started to hang out and she started to learn drums. And eventually I asked her to come and play drums in the band. Gilles and I started playing drums at peace rallies. We were politicized, but we didn't know how we could make change. And then our friend was in asking us, well, come to the peace rallies and protest marches with us and bring your drums. We're like, oh, this is our way of protest. We can add like energy to this movement in this way. So that's how we started to start playing as a duet. We both loved the band and we wanted to promote the band. So we named ourselves Ladies of Midnight Blue.
That's a nice story. I love it.
We both play for both ensembles. So it's just kind of like connected.
Very nice. And how would you describe your music for people who don't know about it?
We used to say a melodic percussion ensemble, and it's just fused with like lots of like African and Latin percussion, very dance music, some funk, some Afrobeat vibes, but also like it has like a classical melody kind of element to it, you know. It's just really interesting. Sometimes we call it Afro psychedelic funk. We have no idea. I mean, like, we're still looking for the right word, the right description.
Well, also, we call ourselves sort of like energy work with our music, because a lot of the time when we're performing, most of it is improvised.
Yeah.
Which also means that depending on who the people are in the audience, depending on what space we're performing in, depending how we're interacting with them or how they're interacting with us, or what level we are with our energy, that means that the performance becomes something different and something very specific to that space, to that audience, to what we're doing. We do have like songs that we have like prescriptive, like this is the order of it. But a lot of the time we're working with the energy of the room.
That's specific to Ladies of Midnight Blue. We're kind of like the ambassadors, and we go out. And also because Ladies of Midnight Blue shows are heavily improvisatory, we often use that platform, our platform, to actually educate our audiences on the appropriate audience etiquette for our concerts or music that's from the African vernacular, in our style, which is opposite to, if you Google, you know, audience etiquette is don't, but ours is like engage, act, dance, say something. If you like that one moment, clap right now, right there.
I love that.
Don't save it till later. Like, do it right now.
Brilliant. I was wondering how it's been for you navigating the musical industry as Black women, and if there's been challenges along the way.
I feel like it's twofold, right? So living in England and being an immigrant in a sense, right? Because we moved here about 14 years ago. We sort of are able to pick up on all the possibilities and all the opportunities, and we're putting ourselves out there all the time. We don't have sort of the dynamic of limitations that some people may face because of political nature. And also there's been certain doors that are open, because as soon as we come into a room with our accents, people are just like, oh, they sound American, which brings with itself like different levels of understanding. But until that happens, we do face limitations that, you know, people from our cultures face around racism and things that go around that, those kind of limitations where people just see you and then they know who you are, you know, that kind of idea. Hmm. But I think also because we are from America and we don't have those things, we've been able to just jump and leap and try new things. And for instance, our festival, like the festival sort of came about because we wanted there to be a platform for music like ours. And and the idea was that we wanted to bring together a lot of communities that we're working with, communities that we're running workshop with, communities that we had as followings for the bands, communities that we were teaching and those kind of things. And we wanted to bring them together into one space. And now 7 iterations of the festival later, it's bigger than that, right? It's a 4-day festival that brings loads of communities around, and it's not just a platform for us to perform anymore. It's kind of like community. It's a sense of belonging and all these kinds of things. So I feel like we kind of have that sort of double-sided thing where, yes, we have limitations because of who we are and how people see us, but because of being in a new place where we can try new things and just go for it, and we just take the horse by the rein and go. We've been quite fortunate to be able to get to where we are today.
I would say that people who are conditioned in one environment experience certain limitations, and people who are coming from outside of that environment don't see those limitations or haven't been told that they can't in those type of ways. Go back to their environment where they were raised, they will find other limitations. So that's one thing.
Yeah. I mean, we all put limitations around in our heads, don't we? Like, we are, that's something I suppose human to do, but like it's harder for some people than others. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And I would also say that, like, once, you know, like the physical thing of, you know, of our beautiful brown and black skin, like, you know, we might face one thing by just the visual, you know, but when we open our, you know, educated American mouths, you know, like it's a different kind of way people are working and dealing with us. And we found that in many countries.
Yeah.
I think my biggest obstacle has been with gatekeepers, us being excluded from the musical scenes that are part of our culture. So, like, for example, some of the gatekeepers in the North not seeing our music as being part of the black music or the jazz discourse. And no, it's not straight ahead jazz at all, but it's heavily improvised. So us not being able to be programmed, or those folks not choosing to include us in those programs, or if they do, apologizing in their, you know, newsletters, like, oh, this is not normally what we do. It's like, what, you know, or the gatekeeper saying, oh, well, yes, they're playing like African drums, but it's not traditional enough. So we can't, you know, program with us because we have a specific idea of what African music should be. Or even in Latin music, you know, scenes like, oh, well, you know, it's quite whitewashed here. So it's like, well, you don't fit there. So then all of a sudden being excluded from all of the things that make us us, that does do something to you internally, you know, around, and it definitely feeds whatever kind of imposter syndrome or whatever kind of self-hatred or whatever kind of unworthy, that does feed that. So what we ended up doing was creating our festival, Harambe Pasadia. Harambe in Swahili means let's get together or let's pull together. And in Pasadia in Dominican Spanish is to spend the day. So let's get together and spend the day. And we created that. Gilles and I created this space for ourselves to have our music be heard and for a place for us to play and a place where we can invite other artists and other academics to come. And so we can have a community, and there will be no boxes and no gatekeepers. We can have it all.
That's beautiful. Yeah. You mentioned activism, and I was wondering why you think art and music more particularly is a powerful tool to raise awareness and bring peace and justice into the world. It's a big question, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Isn't there like a little song that goes, a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down?
Yeah. That's from a film.
A little bit of that analogy. Go ahead, Gilles.
I guess for me, music is sort of, it's something that is found in all cultures, right? It's a constant. It's like food, right? And I feel like music has the power to transcend barriers that we have, political barriers, you know, social justice activism, and all these kinds of things. Music can transcend ideas as well. Because if someone is outside and they're listening to a music and they're just like, oh, that sounds good, I'm going to dance to it, but they have a stereotypical or some kind of block around blackness as a thing, but they then consume the music. And, you know, there's so much of what that as an art form can transcend and can bring people together. So I think in the most basic of sense, we create music for people to come together. I'm always constantly saying that my main ethos is I want to end racism in one way or another, whether it's everyday activism of like being kind, being friendly, you know, opening doors, talking to someone who people are just passing by, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And then that sort of comes into our art form. Me and Hanabel come together really well because we live our lives in that kind of way. We live our lives trying to make everything that we do for the betterment of our society. And I think our music brings that with it, that energy, that ethos, that sort of less challenge. You don't have to sit down and not move. You can yeah. move, you can dance, you can just get up and feel it, and all of that sort of encompasses everything that we do, I think.
My journey of playing music with Gilles, like in our 20s, I would call us babies in activism as we were developing and cultivating our voices and figuring out who we were and learning about a lot of the world's isms and how our lives are being impacted and how and why we felt the way we felt because of all of these things. You know, it was through music where we were learning about these things, you know, bringing our drums to these protests. Because there weren't platforms for us to perform at, and we started to create our own platforms, small events, which grew and grew into our festival. So then I ended up accidentally starting a PhD. And then, like, in the conclusion of my thesis, I realized that Harambe Pasadia was the space where I was able to put my theories into practice. And then the title of my PhD is Protest Culture, Creative Practice as Sociopolitical Engagement. So how do we use everything we do in service to social justice? And how do we create community intimacy? And realizing that, you know, that where we're at today was because we were invited to bring our drums to these protests and peace rallies. And I realized even after that exercise of the PhD that I saw a lot of people get burnt out with activism and protest and just not feeling like they were able to like make significant enough change to see it in their lifetimes, even though whenever somebody does something, it does have an impact. It's just, it might be so small, they can't see it, or they might not be able to reap the benefits of it. Mm-hmm. And I was really sad to see so many people just, even at an older age, just say, I'm giving up. I'm not going to help anyone. This is mm-hmm. just what it is. And I realized that I wanted to be an activist and I wanted to protest in a very different way, and I wanted to bring fun and joy, and so I call myself an ambassador of fun and genies by proxy. And so we choose our way of protest culture is how we choose to live our everyday life and how we use our platforms to create safe spaces for people to dialogue and to get to know each other. So Harambe Pasadia, let's get together and spend the day, because it's really hard to hate somebody or something that you're familiar with and that you gotten a chance to learn or to be with or to touch or to feel or to hold or to love. So that's how we choose to use our activism and the power of music. You know, we have fans who don't frequent the same spaces from all walks of life, super wealthy, super not wealthy, all kinds of people, different backgrounds. And when they come together for our concerts, they're in the same space. So we have that hour or hour and a half, that magical time to create a space where, not preachy, but just create an environment where they can come together and be. And in that moment, we all love one another and we're enjoying the sounds that are coming from that stage. And so that's our way in which we try to make waves and transform this world through our music and by bringing joy, love, compassion, and happiness to people.
In 2022, you were selected to take part in the Resonance Residency at Opera North. And for people listening who don't know about it, it's a workshop program for music creators of colors working in any genre based in the north of England. So I was wondering how you heard about the program and what this opportunity has been like for you.
I think it was a call out. I think we saw on social media around applying to be part of the residency. Hanabiel applied as a workshop, including myself in it as a musician, but also as a visual artist. And we also work with another artist called James Devil. And part of the residency was to create visuals, but to also to bring electronic into our music and to workshop in a way that we haven't workshopped before. From that residency, we had an amazing performance. We did some light boxes, which we're going to actually use as part of the Love Revolution show, which is happening in March.
Just having an organization with a producer supporting, you know, for me, it's really lovely to have opportunities to be extremely ambitious. And this was one of those opportunities. And to have a well-oiled organization, you know, hold space for us, and like Catherine, our producer, is just absolutely amazing, like helping to guide the ideas and, you know, and like helping me to figure out and scaling the vision or scaling back on it when it needs to, or yeah. You know, was really helpful. And Gilles, like she said, she's like an amazing visual artist, mostly focusing a lot of time on music. So I just really wanted to, you know, get her visuals in our show in a bigger way. So we commissioned her to develop these light boxes to add a bit of visual spectacle on stage. And those light boxes are kind of the visual representation of Harambe Pasadena. So we're working with like traditional Taino symbols as well as African Adinkra symbols. And the other thing is that, like Gili said, it's a continuation on from our original residency. Mm-hmm. And I think for our residency, we had the privilege of actually working in the Howard Assembly Room for that whole week. So it gave us opportunity to really see how we can like scale up our mm-hmm. show. And from that residency, we are now being commissioned to create this new family show, which we're calling A Love Revolution.
I love it. Just for people who don't know, Love Revolution will be at the Howard Assembly Room on Saturday, the 23rd of March, and we really look forward to having you. The show is aimed at families for young audience ages 6+. Why do you feel it's important to connect with children and young people?
They are the future.
Yeah.
And I mean, like when Gilles and I go to schools and give workshops, sometimes like, you know, it starts with the evidence is in like when we say good morning and like good morning, we're like good morning, good morning. And we go good morning and they're just wild and they just get that energy. And then they're here for us. And that workshop is, you know, but every year, grade, the next grade up, the next grade up, those good mornings become a challenge and a struggle to pull out. And sometimes you can see, like, it feels weird. I don't know what it is, but you almost see, like, the joy and freedom being conditioned out in a way because of so many rules, so many. So I feel like it's an opportunity for us to just be extremely creative. Let them also explore new music. You know, it's not many people are doing what we do. So if they're seeing something new, exciting, and different at a young age, then it's more, you know, their minds are opened up to new things, you know.
And linking to the work you've been doing with communities, can you maybe tell us more about this aspect of your work?
So we do quite a lot of varied amounts of workshops. In the past 2 years, we've worked with two different youth organizations who have created their own festival. So one is a festival that ran last year called Find Fest, which is based in Hexham. And then we've also worked with BUPFest. BUP stands for Building Our Planet. And it's a music festival focused around environmental issues. We also do music making workshops. I'm a visual artist, so I do quite a lot of workshops around printmaking and photography, filming and documentary work. We wear a lot of different hats.
Yeah. How do you find the time to do all of this?
My motto is you can only do one thing at a time.
Would you have any advice to give young people, and particularly young people of color, interested in a career in music or in the arts?
This was something I was told myself. So I started my adult career as a pre-med student. And I think around the third year, I met with my counselor and I went into his office. And he saw that I was maybe struggling a little bit. And he kind of sat me down and said, if you're going to do this, you need to love it to the point where you live it and it's part of your being. And I kind of turned around and said, I don't do that. I don't want to be a doctor. I don't love it. I don't want it. I don't like memorizing things in this kind of way. I like to be creative. And then at that point, he was like, well, we need to figure out what carries that idea for you. What is it that you love? What is it that you want to do for the rest of your time, right? Yeah. It's not a hobby. It's the thing that you love to do and that you awaken every morning. You're just like, I want to do that thing. And for me, it wasn't medicine. And it took me a couple of years to figure out it was art. It was art that sort of drove that passion for me. So I would say that. What is the thing that when you wake up, you're just like, I would really love to be doing that right now. I really love doing that. And if I had to do it at midnight tonight, I would still be like really excited and happy to be doing that again. If you have a passion for it, then do it. Don't let anything stop you, because it's sort of what pushes you along, isn't it? So
I think we've all been conditioned around this myth of we have to work really hard and, you know, let's look forward to retiring. Nah, you have to love what you do, be passionate about it. Know that if anyone's ever said you're unworthy, we're all worthy of every single thing that we want to do. If you don't understand what this means, learn about what self-actualizing is. Do some research and find out what it means to cultivate an abundance mindset. Practice authentic good from the beginning. And for me, that means I'm going to engage in endeavors or exchanges or deals where everybody wins. Never try to get over. That's just bad karma, bad energy, especially in the music industry. And you can have artist exchanges. You can swap. You don't always have to be about money. In most industries, your word is all you have. And so when you say you're going to do something, try to do it. And if you know you can't do that thing, let that person know as early as possible, because you accidentally or unintentionally, you don't want to sabotage someone's project or create a bad name for yourself. Those are the things for me. The core point is, like, make sure you love what you're doing and never feel like you, well, you sometimes will have to, you know, do something that you don't like to do, but if that's a sacrifice to help to get to where you want to be, to do what you want, what you love, then that's okay.
And any advice for young people, or in fact, anybody who would like to make a difference in the world and improve the society we live in?
I would say activism starts from within. And I feel like it's very important for us as humans to not to judge people. Or I choose not to criticize someone for not jumping on a particular cause. A lot of people don't agree with that. But I feel like activism starts within. It's like, what can I do personally to make change with this? You know, if you don't have, you know, millions of pounds to be able to donate to a cause or to alleviate someone's water situation, what can you do locally? You know, how can you help locally with your things? Or how can you just work on getting therapy to be a nicer human, so you're not engaging in bad business practice just because you're unsettled with from within, you know? So I would say, think about what you can do locally and try not to judge others.
Specifically, I guess, for artists of color and sort of the hurdles that we have to jump within our own cultures or within our societies, I think we already have things that we have to work within about, you know, self-love and around doing better for yourself and for your family and working out the hurdles that are put by others for you to continue, right? I feel like a lot of that learning around emotional intelligence and figuring out what those things are that are external to us and how do we surpass them. I think that's really important. And I think it needs to be taught within our schools as young, what emotional intelligence means, what self-actualizing, how do you do self-love, and how does that then in turn help our communities, right? And understanding ourselves is how we understand others. And also, if you want to be active, anything from volunteering to helping your neighbor is being an activist, right? So it's understanding that helping other humans in the best way we can is what activism is about, because we're all in this world together, and we only have one world, and we need to be able to keep it for our future generations. So understanding that any little thing that you do is towards a greater good.
Right. It's also about like understanding your own values, what's important to you, and also setting boundaries. So then you're not allowing people to take advantage of you, or you're not choosing to volunteer or work for things that are not in line with your values. That's also part of it. Taking care of yourself and being happy and knowing how to make yourself happy.
You've been listening to the Up for North Artistic Futures podcast with the inspirational Hannah Biel Sanders and Gilles Del Carmel Suriel from the Ladies of Midnight Blue. If you have any burning questions for our future guests or would like to suggest people you would like to meet, please email education@upfornorth.co.uk. You can also find us on Instagram, search Up for North Learning. See you next time!